Welcome back to Cultural Breakdown from Focus Press. I'm Jack Wilkie, and excited to get into week two of this new show. I want to thank everybody who liked, commented, shared last week. We got great feedback on it, and really enjoy doing it. Something I look forward to doing now each week. Last week, we looked at Harrison Butker and the speech that kind of set the internet on fire. This week, we're going to go on a little bit bigger picture look of the culture and things going on and the way culture develops. And again, take a bit of a bigger picture look. Week to week, there aren't always those kind of all attention capturing stories like there were with Butker last week. When there are those, that's exactly what we're going to focus on the show. Other weeks, we're going to go look at some more thematic things, some, as I said, bigger picture. But I say all that to say, if there is a story that really captures your attention, something that you would like to see covered on this show, leave a comment. Whether you're watching this here on YouTube, on my site, jackwilkie.co, wherever you may be catching it, on Facebook as well, through our Focus Press channels there, send a message, leave a comment, and say, I'd be interested to hear you talk about this. And so we'll take those into consideration. As always, I'm going to invite you to like the YouTube video, subscribe to the Focus Press channel. We've got a lot coming out every week on top of these episodes, our podcasts, other things that we're doing. I'm going to start some short videos soon, going along with my Sunday school catch-up book. And so, yeah, just lots of content coming. Be sure you're subscribed to get the latest. What I want to talk about this week is two potential futures, both for the church, for the country, for the society we live in, and really what's going to dictate those futures. And it's one of those where we can learn from history so we don't repeat history. We can look back and see what did happen and do things a little bit differently. And these two futures that we have in front of us, I think, are brilliantly depicted in two Norman Rockwell paintings. I grew up with a grandmother who is a gigantic Norman Rockwell fan, and so I've always had an affinity for his work, and I'm sure you're familiar with it. 1950s, very nostalgic, kind of very set in that time period paintings that he did. But there were two in particular that I've seen on social media recently. I had not seen them before, and with both of them, they leave such a powerful sense as you stare at them and get everything that's going on. And so I want to get into those and then talk about the implications that they have for our future. Looking at our first one, this is one done by Rockwell in 1959 called Easter Morning. There you see Mom has the kids all dressed up nice, headed to church, while Dad kind of, as you can see, there's a little bit of shame in it. He's slumping down, you know, not wanting to be seen as they walk out the door to church, as he's there with his cigarette, his newspaper, and his bathrobe and pajamas, not interested, not tagging along with them, not joining in as the family goes to worship. Again, it's just a painting. It's just Norman Rockwell. He depicted a million different things, but you look at what's happening here with this family, and you look at 1959, and you think about the way the culture has devolved from 1959. You look at the way church has declined since 1959. You look at youth dropout rates from 1959 on. And to me, this image captures it right here. When Dad isn't right up front leading Mom and Dad and or Mom and the kids to church, when he's not involved, when he's not spiritual, things happen. There are consequences from that. There's fallout that comes from that. And of course, we know about fatherlessness and statistics of how negatively that impacts society. Things like their academics, things like their mental health, the crime, as you see just some of the stats I've put up here about the poverty they grow up in. The children of single parent homes are more than twice as likely to commit suicide. 71% of high school dropouts are fatherless. That if Dad is not there and involved, it's a really big problem. It's an issue in their development. And when that happens, when we have fatherlessness, society starts collapsing because these are the results among children. And now we're at a time where I think it's half of all children are not born to married parents. While they might have a dad in the home, it might be a cohabitation situation or whatever, but without that commitment, a lot of times it ends up dad's not around. Mom and dad, you know, there's the shared custody. And this is the normal we've grown into since 1959 and that Rockwell painting of Dad not being fully engaged and plugged in. Well, in that picture, of course, Dad is there, but he's not leading. This is how it works. This is how society devolves. As one generation's dad isn't involved, the next one, that's where divorce starts to increase, that's where degeneracy starts to increase, and all those things that starts with this dad sitting there read the newspaper while mom takes the kids to church. All of the issues, the downstream effects of that. There's a really interesting article that Newsweek put out on a study by a group, I think it was a Catholic group called Communio, about fathers, their relationship of the youth dropout rate and all of those things that contribute to where we are. Very interestingly, the man who put on the research quoted an Oxford University Press study. He said they disproportionately found was that an adult's description of his or her relationship being warm and close with her dad was the biggest predictor of whether or not that adult practiced faith as an adult. So you need dad being warm, but dad being close, dad building a relationship with his kids for the kids to have the faith. But there's kind of an aside to that of dad has to have faith too. If dad's not going to church, if dad's not leading the family spiritually, what's going to happen? If dad is doing what the Norman Rockwell guy is doing, they're not going to have a faith to pick up for themselves. I've said it many times, I have no plans to leave my kids a $1 billion inheritance because I don't have $1 billion. I can't pass them on the faith if I don't have the faith, if I'm not leading them in that way. Continuing on in this Newsweek story about the Communio study, the man said, 80% of everybody in the pews on Sunday morning grew up in a home with continuously married biological parents. That is incredible. 4 out of 5 people in every church building in the country had continuously married biological parents. That's just staggering. That's something that you look at the loss rate, you look at what we need to do to strengthen the church. It is in the home, and it is with dad leading, not doing the Norman Rockwell thing there. He goes on to say there, underlined at the bottom, what they're not frequently understanding is that what's driving the loss of people from the pews is the collapse of the family itself. I mean, you can put those things together, that the church is a family of families, and as the family fell apart, society has fallen apart, and as the family has fallen apart, church has gone in decline, and we're feeling the consequences of this that starts with the Norman Rockwell guy sitting there while mom takes the kids to church. Also, another study, Lifeway Research, and I thought this one was fascinating. It's one of those correlation doesn't equal causation, but this says so much. And everybody kind of understands this, that Mother's Day is a big day for churches. This Lifeway Research found that the highest attended days were Christmas, Easter, and then number 3, Mother's Day. But what they also found is Father's Day didn't really move the needle. He says, Scott McConnell, who directed the Lifeway Research study, said, clearly, mothers want to be present for the affirmation that is typically offered in most churches, but families also are present knowing their attendance will honor their mother. Many families make church attendance on Mother's Day nearly obligatory. But going on from there, that last paragraph, he says, the attendance difference between Mother's Day and Father's Day is telling. Either churches are less effective in affirming fathers, or families believe Christian fathers don't value their participation in worship services. Think about that for a minute. Mother's Day, even kids that don't, you know, grown adult kids that haven't been to church all year long, they'll go to church with mom. I've had people like that in congregations where I've preached, where we didn't see them all year long, maybe on Christmas, Mother's Day, okay, I'll go to church for mom. Okay, great, you know, hopefully that results in them maybe a foot in the door to coming back. A lot of times it doesn't, they're just honoring mom. Why not Father's Day? Why is it not considered important to dad, and why is it not important for the kids to get there with dad? This is the social way we look at all this. We look at women as more spiritual than men. We look at, you know, churches have long had a majority women attendance over men. And so many times families are looked at as mom wearing the pants in the family, or she's the one dragging the religious commitment of the family. And all of these things that we're seeing leading to that Father's Day, Mother's Day thing. But then the Oxford University Press study that Communio cited, they said this, closeness to fathers matters more than closeness to mothers in religious transmission. Among evangelical fathers, there is a 25-point difference in the professed faith similarity between parent-child for children who feel emotionally close to fathers compared to those who are not close. For evangelical mothers, the difference is just 1 percentage point. Mom doesn't really move the needle for their faith. Dad does, a 25-point difference if they feel emotionally close to their father. So if they've got a good relationship with dad and he can guide them into the faith, it makes a difference. Well, when dad's doing this, that doesn't happen. And so, as I mentioned earlier, there's the downstream effects of, yeah, he's there, but he's not leading them spiritually. Well, the next generation, a lot of them weren't there, and so they're not leading them at all. And so you're seeing those effects. But in that household right there, we know the things that can happen the way the kids look at dad, it's going to go one of two ways. They are going to grow up and go, dad's right, church isn't important. Or they're going to grow up and say, church is really important and dad doesn't get it. Dad missed the boat. Dad is not understanding what's really important. Of course, the wife, you know, she's going to have to carry the load. Look, she's got all the kids dressed and looking sharp and ready to go. That's frustrating to her. That's a burden that she has to do all of her motherly duties, and she's got to lead the family spiritually. That's not helpful. That is something that's difficult for her. But then there's also going to be that frustration. She doesn't respect him, and even if she's a good, godly, devout woman, she's trying, but there is going to be that tension in between them of, I'm doing your job. Get your act together, buddy, and I've got to lead the family spiritually. I've got to, you know, keep the kids in line in that way. Make sure they're getting to church, and as they grow older, if they start drifting away from church, her resentment of dad is going to grow. It's really an ugly picture, but it happens so many times. You're going to end up with daughters who maybe don't respect dad, or don't share the faith with him. What all those things we just looked at can happen. You're going to have sons who grow up living for mom's approval because dad's doesn't matter that much. If the son stays religiously, mom is his rock. You can see this a little bit with Paul talking about Timothy and, you know, your mother and your grandmother, and that was great, but there's also a little bit of Paul telling Timothy, all right, it's time to man up. Well, he didn't learn masculine spirituality from his dad because he wasn't involved. It was this situation you see right here. And so with that, part of the problem is there's a lack of role models in the Bible. Noah comes off the ark. He's the blameless one, the kind of the last man standing on earth, and yet his own family. Ham immediately falls away. Shem and Japheth, we don't really see the world going in a great direction post-flood. Obviously, you have Abraham called by God. You have Melchizedek. You've got people here and there who seem to know God. Generally speaking, not a lot of that. Isaac, the son of promise given to Abraham, raises up Jacob and Esau, and there's a war within his own household. That's not good. Then Jacob raises up his sons with the different wives and concubines, and of course they sell Joseph into slavery and present him for dead, and everything Reuben did, and Levi and Simeon. It's a mess. The family is a disaster. And then, of course, you can go to David, and not just Solomon, but Absalom and Tamar, and everything involved in the biblical families. We don't have a lot of good role models. You don't have a lot of good social role models. You don't. In the church, we need more and more role models, people that we can look to. You think about how many giants in the faith who, fantastic preachers, converted hundreds, maybe thousands of people, and their own kids fell away. It's a really big problem that, again, we're looking at a dark future or a bright future, depending on the fathers, depending on what happens. And the problems that this takes is maybe we can look at that and go, well, you know, the dads in our church, they don't do that. They don't stay at home in their bathrobe. I guess it wouldn't be reading the newspaper. It'd be scrolling their phone. They're in church. Okay, but are they involved spiritually? Are they leading their family spiritually? You've got absent dads who just aren't there. That's a problem. You've got distant dads who don't really have a relationship with their kids too much. You know, it's kind of mom's venue and dad's not as hands-on. I think that was more of a problem in previous generations. There's less of that today because of positive influences that have gone a better direction, but still it can be you're the sports dad. You're there for every game. You're out there to play catch with them or, you know, shoot hoops with them and watch the game with them and take them to the game and all of those things, but maybe not the spiritual. Or the achievement dad, the biggest fan of their academics or their band or other extracurricular activities, and you're really invested in that, but nah, when it comes to reading the Bible with them or, you know, pushing them into growing in the church, not so much. And then, of course, just buddy-buddy, the dad who doesn't discipline, the dad who doesn't lead, the dad who doesn't draw any lines. Those are problems that we have that lead to the kinds of issues we see. But I mentioned there were two Rockwells. This other one's more obscure. It's a little bit harder to find. If you Google it, In His Spirit is a title I've seen given to it, but I don't know if that's official. It was from a 1961 seasonal calendar that was put out with Rockwell's paintings. The direct opposite of the one we just saw. Here you have not just a dad and a son in church. You've got a dad showing his son in the hymnal where the song is to sing with him. You've got the son dressed just like dad. This is such a beautiful image. This is how it's supposed to be. And you look at this man and the son that he's raising, and you look at the first Rockwell of the man shamefully slumping down in his chair as mom leads the kids to church. This, as I said, it's the two futures before us, is if we've got men doing this job, it's a bright future. And things are tough right now. Things are probably going to be tough for a little while, but this is the path forward. And I think you can see that from the scriptures. When you look in Malachi 4, when it's talking about John the Baptist coming as Elijah the prophet, and then Jesus coming, the promise is the hearts of the fathers are going to be returned to the children, the hearts of the children to the fathers, because that is a big dynamic of when things aren't going well, is the family falling apart and not passing things on generationally. I mentioned we don't have many good role models. Can you think of a time in the Old Testament where two and three generations in a row, they strung together faithfulness? You'd have a good king and his son would mess things up. You'd have things get pretty good and start getting better, and then the next generation or two generations later, they're back to idolatry. The return or the promise of Jesus coming and John the Baptist paving the way is, this is part of it. The hearts of the fathers with the children with their fathers. You can add to that Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. Of course, it's about children obeying their parents, but notice, interestingly, verse 4, you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Fathers. Now, obviously, mom is very important in raising kids. We looked at that last week with the Harrison Butker speech. But this was specifically given to fathers, to not provoke them to wrath, but to bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. The first Rockwell guy in the bathrobe is failing that duty. The second one, they're teaching his son to sing songs in church. That's what it looks like. That is the big difference maker there. And then, of course, Deuteronomy 6, as they were going into the promised land, and he was encouraging them to this faithfulness that would make things work for them in the land. Notice a few of the highlights here. I'm not going to read all the way 6, 1 through 9, although it's a great chapter worth reading. But he says that you need to fear the Lord. You need to keep his commandments. You, your son, and your grandson all the days of your life. And then the promises that go with it, that your days may be prolonged, that it may be well with you, that you may multiply greatly. If you do this, things are going to go well. Now, of course, we don't have the land of Israel. It's not so much of a national promise, but any nation where the people start doing this is going to grow. There's going to be more Christians. There's going to be stronger Christian influence on society like we used to see. Like the world that fell apart around Rockwell, that was led by guys like the guy in the first painting who didn't do his job, and here we are today. And so there is a promise. There is this idea that things get better under godly fathers. But continuing on from that, as I said earlier, if you don't have it, if you don't have the $1 billion, you can't give your kids $1 billion. If fathers don't love the Lord their God with all their heart, soul, and with their strength, they can't pass it on. He tells them, these words which I command you shall be in your heart. You've got to have the word internalized. You've got to have a walk with God. And then you teach them diligently to your children. Then you take up that task of making sure you're passing this on to the next generation. It goes a long way. It's a really, really big difference maker. Looking at one more, Psalm 127, 3 through 5. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate. A lot of times this verse gets boiled down to a debate of how many kids you're supposed to have. You can do that with it, but really look at the point that children are like arrows in the hand of a warrior, and you've got your quiver full of them, you won't be ashamed, you can speak with their enemies in the gate. It means you've got power, you've got sway, that you have multiplied yourself, that if you've got the faith and you're serving God, and you've got children, you've got sons that you're bringing up to do the same thing and lead their own families, that's multiplication. The Great Commission also applies to your own household, of making disciples, of seeding the next generation with all kinds of people who are faithful to God and strong and able to stand up to the task. And you think about, in a church that maybe is going wayward, the man who has raised up four faithful children, that they are part of swaying the direction of that church. That's what this is talking about. You're talking about, I mean, in a country where votes matter. Now you can outvote people if you raise your kids in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I mean, ways in which that influence can grow, this is one of the ways God prescribed to do it. And so as we look at this picture once again, this is not, there is the old trope, going back to Mother's Day and Father's Day, moms, you're the greatest, we adore moms. Boy, what would we do without moms? And it's great, moms are fantastic and they're important. And then you get to Father's Day. Dads, step up, do your job, get your act together. That's not what I'm here to do. I'm here to talk about like how critical, how important, how big of a deal it is. We have those statistics of when dad isn't there, but when he's not connected, when he's not spiritually forming his children, when he's not doing what this guy does here, it's no wonder we have generations in which the majority, for two or three generations now, have left the church. It's no wonder that society is in decline of the dad who isn't leading his kid to church but letting mom do it. Or isn't, maybe he goes to church with them, but the rest of the week the spiritual life is led by mom if she's doing it. Maybe neither one of them is. They're just getting their kids to church and hoping it's good enough, hoping the Bible class teachers get the job done, hoping the youth minister gets the job done, not actively saying, this is my job and I can change the world. You look at those scriptures we just looked at, those are encouraging, they are empowering, they are they're calling you a revolutionary. In a world that's falling apart, you're a warrior with a quiver full of arrows, which you can use to make a difference. I'm not going to be the president. I'm not going to be a billionaire who, you know, like Elon Musk, and get to change the world that way. That's just not going to happen. I've currently got four kids, and it's my job to raise them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. It's my job to be this dad right here, showing my kids, especially, you know, leading my sons as they grow older to lead their own families, and my daughters what they're to look for in a husband that they can support and be a part of that as well. That's where you can make a difference. That's where the average guy is a revolutionary, is a world changer. And if you don't believe me, look at what happened. That first painting was 1959. This one was 1961. If every church dad since 1961 had been this guy, where would the church be? Where would society be? Unfortunately, we've had more church dads be the other guy, be spiritually detached from leading their family, be not involved in that way. You've got power, you've got influence, you've got the ability to really change things by being this guy. It's so important at the two futures that these possibilities create, that really the center of it is every dad in every Christian home making that decision. So let's talk about how, let's talk about what can come from that. Lead by example. Morally, you need to not have thing. You can't be perfect, but you look at it in the Bible when guys were called blameless. It means there's nothing anybody could hold against them. If they did something wrong, they owned it, they improved on it, they got better. Lead by example. You need to be the one who is getting the family to church. You need to be the one that has a walk with God yourself. You need to not have any hidden sins that are pulling down your moral authority. And if you don't respect yourself, you know you're not worthy of the respect, and that throws the dynamic off. You've got to lead by example. Second, you show your family you're going to prioritize and serve the church. You're the dad who might put your foot down and be unpopular with the kids to say, we're not skipping the church for your favorite activities, for sports, for anything else. We're going to be a part of the church. We're going to serve the church. We're not going to be Sunday morning only people. We're going to be there. We're going to prioritize the church and be active serving members of it. Practice family devotionals. Get the Bible open in your home. If you don't have children yet or they're too young, make sure it's with your wife, that you're reading the Word together. You're discussing it, you are praying together, you're singing songs to the Lord together. We've got some resources for that at Focus Press. I know it can be intimidating to start. Pick up a family worship guide. It'll give you just a 10-15 minute thing to start with every single day. Get a resource that'll get you doing that if you're not already. Discuss the Bible, discuss life, not just at devotional time, but as Deuteronomy 6 said, when you rise up, when you lie down, as you go in the way, as you sit in your house, talk about what's going on in your kids' lives. Talk about with your wife. You know, see the world. Talk about current events. Talk about role models. Talk about the things that you're seeing going on in the world around you. Have those discussions. Be involved in their life. That emotional warmth that we looked at in those studies earlier, that they know they can turn to you. Protect and shelter as necessary. There might be a time to decide, you know what, my kid doesn't need a phone. You know what, I'm going to put the parental controls on there so they can't get on certain sites, they can't use certain social media that I think is leading them the wrong way. I'm going to turn off certain TV shows, whatever it may be. That is the job of the dad at a certain point, to spiritually protect the family until they're really mature enough to handle and discern and know where they're supposed to go. Of course, pray diligently. Pray hard. For your kids, for yourself, pray for guidance, pray for strength to get through it. This is a challenging thing, and if you look at it and go, yeah, no, I've got it figured out, I'm great at it, I've just got all the problems solved, that's probably not the right approach. It is a very humbling experience to try and be that guy, to realize the weight put on your shoulders of how much of a swing there is for, if I do this wrong, and if I do this God's way, and do this right and faithfully as He's called me to do. A lot changes, a lot hinges on these decisions we make, and so prayer is a big part of it. If you're not a husband, if you're not a father, I mean, if you're a young man, plan on being this guy. don't just plan on kind of, well, I want to get married and, you know, have a wife and, you know, we'll see how it goes. No, really look at that image and think, I want to be that guy. I want to be the guy with the son, you know, following in my footsteps and I'm showing him where to go. I want to be able to tell my family, imitate me as I imitate Christ. Not that I'm perfect, but that I'm trying to lead the way and to do that. And so plan on being that guy. If you're a wife or if you're a woman looking for a husband, pray diligently. Applies just as well. But also respect and honor. It's so common in this society. It's so just casual how much we bash husbands, bash dads, all the commercials about, oh, the wife has to show the stupid husband how it's done. Don't undermine. Don't be in that way. And you know what? If your husband hasn't done this, but if he's not doing this at all, still show him the reverence, do the position that he has. If you're the wife taking your kids to church, keep doing that. Find male mentors for your sons as best you can in the church. But also do the 1 Peter 3 thing. Through the submissive and quiet spirit, maybe you can win him without a word. Keep doing your job. If your husband is growing into that, number one, husbands don't ever take these things and go, you know what, I am supposed to lead the family. Honey, I'm leading the family. Submit, get in line. This is how it goes. Lead by example. You are going to have to be outspoken at some point, but if you haven't been there, you don't get to go in and start throwing weight around. That doesn't ever work for anybody. You know, if you're that guy who's been delinquent, been withdrawn in your leadership, you don't get to just flip the tables and go, all right, we're going all in right now. You say, you know what, I've been wrong, own up to it, and grow into that leadership. And if you're a wife and your husband starts doing that, the temptation is going to be to grab the control back, grab the steering wheel of the family back from him. He might make some mistakes. He might not do it the way you would do it. He might not do it perfectly. Submit, honor, realize that, man, he's taken on a heavy burden here, and he's owning up to it, and he's doing what he can, and pray for him, support him in that. And so, again, I think there's just so much to be learned from those two Rockwell images. Again, you look at the dates on them, 1959, 1961, and everything we've lost since then. You look at no-fault divorce, you look at abortion, you look at the drug culture, the things that happened in the 60s and 70s. It would be the kids walking through that picture in 1959 with their mom to church were the generation of Woodstock, were the generation of the 70s, the hippie, you know, flower power, all of the drug culture. Things went downhill in a hurry. And you just look at the influence, the things that can happen of fathers really stepping up to that role. It's two futures in front of us, and the biggest determinant, I am fully convinced, is Christian men raising Christian sons and daughters with their Christian wives, leading them in the way they should go so we can pass it on to the next generation and have a bright future for the church. As always, I'm going to invite you to like and comment here on the YouTube channel if you're watching it here or whichever venue you're finding this video on. Make sure you're subscribed to Focus Press on YouTube. As I said before, we've got lots of content coming. You can find my writing at jackwilkie.co, where I'll send out a couple of emails a week. You'll get the updates on that and other things going on. I'll put up a screen here at the end, the different places you can find me, find our work. And I will talk to you guys next week. As I said, if you have a suggestion, if you have a news story you would like to see covered on Cultural Breakdown or something like this, a bigger picture topic to say we should talk about something in the way that we just talked about fatherhood, be sure to pass it on. I would love to hear it, and I will talk to you guys next week.